Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open from American Express, presenting the interactive webcast event, Making a Name for Yourself. Kate and Andy Spade and Bobby Brown discuss their leap from business to brand, created by Open from American Express. Registration at openforumonline.com.
There are too many big problems in this state, Dominic. People need too much help for us to waste time with bickering on this stage. Let's talk about New York and their problems. Let's make a difference and let's get to work.
Let me agree with Andrew, which is why I've released my speeches and books. But I'll tell you, if Elliot Spitzer had to sue your agency because of the years you were there, is that negative or is it relevant? Okay.
That was Andrew Cuomo and Mark Green. I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. Good morning. Last night's televised debate between the Democratic candidates for Attorney General, which was co-sponsored by WNYC and simulcast on our AM 820 station, was 60 minutes of attacks, counterattacks, compliments, and even a touch of humor, and mixed in along the way a discussion of the Attorney General's job and how the different candidates would approach it. Joining me this morning to analyze the debate and its aftermath are Kathleen Kate Lucadamo, my colleague at the New York Daily News, who covered last night's debate, and WNYC's Beth Fertig, who was one of the questioners. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Kate, you were inside the auditorium at Pace University where the debate was held, right?
Right.
From the mood in the room, was there any kind of informal consensus about who won the debate?
No. I mean, I think a lot of people were there with their respective camps. So from their point of view, their candidate did really well. So nobody, you know, was running out saying, you know, Sean won or Andrew won. It was more a discussion of, well, what was happening between Green and Cuomo. You know, we had heard that they were going to attack each other for a long time fight, and this was kind of the first on stage fighting. So there was more kind of dissecting what happened than declaring a winner.
I think the first email I got was at about 8:13, maybe a minute or two after it was all over, declaring Cuomo the winner. Of course, that was from his campaign. What was the basic dynamic? The exchange that we heard was one of many that took place between Cuomo and Green, but there were two others on the stage. Can you let us know kind of what the dynamic was?
Well, the dynamic seems to be, you know, Green was going after Cuomo, trying to hammer away at his HUD record. Cuomo seemed to, you know, pretty much kind of stay on message, and then you had Sean and Charlie, I think, just trying to let people know who they are, what their issues are, what they feel passionately about, why they want to be Attorney General. So, you know, just kind of struggling to say, can you stop fighting so we can start talking? You're eating up our time. So there seemed to be that kind of dual debate going on.
As far as you could tell, did the candidates have about equal numbers of supporters in the hall?
It was a little hard to tell from where I was seated. I mean, certainly after, when we left the debate, they all seemed to have a generous camp around them. Cuomo's might have been a little bit bigger.
You know, I'm asking because
Green's, but
I asked because there was, I was watching it on television from New York One. There was a lot of clapping that got unusually loud at odd times, really. And one person who posted an observation on the Daily News Politics blog wrote, and I'm quoting, "Sitting in the audience, it was interesting to see how some of the union people were doing what they were told to do, clap for everyone but Green." Did you notice that strategy being played out at all?
I didn't notice that strategy being played out, but it might have been my vantage point from where I was sitting.
Right. Well, let me bring in Beth, who was there from, of course, a very different perspective. Did you have any sense of audience games being played about people clapping on cue and that sort of thing?
Well, when I was coming into the auditorium after taking a brief dinner break with my coworkers here, we walked in and there were hundreds of people outside Pace University. And I couldn't believe that there was that much turnout. And there were signs plastered all over, you know, all around the scaffolding and all over the street. And it looked like about an equal number for all four candidates, maybe a little bit more for the other three than for Mark Green. And they were just getting into it out in the street. They were singing Cuomo, Cuomo, or Maloney, Maloney. And they were really, really feisty. And when we got into the auditorium, it didn't even appear to be half full. So I'm sure that they kept a lot of these campaigners from going in, you know, to try to reduce the amount of that. But it did seem to me a little spirited there in the auditorium. And there were a lot of points where people would boo at Mark Green, especially at the end. He got a lot of boos for some of his attacks on Andrew Cuomo. So I don't know if that was from the Cuomo camp booing him or the other candidates. It's impossible to know.
It's interesting, the scene you're talking about being set outside, that if you think about whose benefit that would be for, the only thing I could think of would be TV cameras, although I didn't see any of it on the coverage that I saw. It didn't show those throngs of hundreds of people, or to try and influence you all as questioners. But you had your questions already set up before you went in, didn't you?
We did, but we also solicited suggestions. You know, I know we did that here at WNYC on our website, and I think New York One did as well. I'm not so sure how far influenced we were by any of the suggestions. But we met and we considered what to use, and we knew the dynamic was really going to be everybody trying to knock Andrew Cuomo off his perch because he's the front runner, and that Mark Green especially had the most to gain in attacking Cuomo because he was, you know, running second place, whereas the other two, Sean Patrick Maloney and Charlie King, were trying to show who they are and look like the nice guys. And I think that's what we saw last night was this intense fight between Mark Green and Andrew Cuomo, mostly with, you know, Mark Green attacking Cuomo consistently from the beginning. And then the other two saying, hey, wait, let's, you know, playing peacemaker at one point joking, I feel like a UN peacekeeper here is what Sean Patrick Maloney said, and cut this out. You know, they were just trying to call attention to themselves. And I think because the two of them were playing the nice guys, it made Green look even more like the bad guy.
Okay, actually, it's funny you should mention that. We actually have a clip of what you're talking about, and I think that will illustrate it for our readers quite well.
Yes, it's increasing staffing. I also want to enroll the DAs. Every county has a district attorney. I want to enroll the DAs in this project. They're there. They haven't been bringing these cases for two reasons. They're difficult cases to bring initially, and I proposed having a revolving loan fund where they can actually be funded up front for upfront costs of the case and share in the returns at the DA's. And I think that would, if we have the DA's offices working and making these cases also, it would be a tremendous addition.
I do think that's an extremely bad idea. Important as Medicaid fraud is, DA's are going after pedophiles and murderers and robbers, and to balkanize what the Attorney General does and have 62 DAs, which are under budget pressure, pick up a part of it when they have no experience is foolish. What we need is a False Claims Act so there are thousands of individual whistleblowers.
That was actually a slightly different clip, but you know what, we should pick up on it. There was a substantive debate. This was one of the few things that poked up between all of the, in the midst of all of the acrimony, which was a proposal by Andrew Cuomo to have the 62 county district attorneys all over the state use a revolving loan fund, in other words, to draw down state resources to be able to do some of the Medicaid prosecutions that some of the smaller counties especially don't have the manpower or the resources to really mount. And Green jumped in and said that he thought it was a bad idea. Had you heard any of that on the campaign trail before, Kate?
No, they haven't really. That was the first I heard of this revolving loan getting the DAs involved in helping to combat Medicaid fraud and from Green. So, you know, apparently, they chose this forum to bring it out and discuss it. I don't.
Do you think Green was hearing it for the first time as well?
I do.
And it seemed like a sort of an automatic reaction, saying no, that's a bad idea. I didn't get the sense that it was sort of an either or proposition. But they nevertheless sort of tussled over it.
Well, I think they both looked at this issue very carefully and how they want to combat it, and just, you know, any way they can kind of distinguish themselves. And I think that, you know, Mark Green was kind of looking at his experience as, you know, consumer affairs public advocate. And saying, well, why don't we, you know, create kind of a whistleblower line. And I think that's where his answer came from.
Beth,
it's one of the few areas that we could see them kind of clearly coming up with different solutions to maybe the same problem.
It was one of a few moments of kind of stark clarity of that sort. Beth, when you all were preparing for the debate, coming up with the questions, was this anywhere on anybody's radar screen?
We deliberately asked about Medicaid fraud because we wanted to get them to, I don't know if criticize is the word, but we wanted to get them to scrutinize the role of Attorney General Elliot Spitzer. In previous town halls and meetings, they've all tried to say, I'm going to continue the great work of Elliot Spitzer. They praise him whenever they can. They invoke his name as if he's, you know, the god of attorneys general. And we thought, let's try to get them to criticize Spitzer's record and scrutinize it a little and see, is there anything there that you would not have done or would have done differently? And with Medicaid fraud being such a big issue, we want to press them to see, is that an area where you think Elliot Spitzer did not do enough? He's known so much for going after Wall Street. Are there other areas in which you think he could have done more? And so it was interesting to hear that Cuomo had this particular proposal and that Green disagreed with it.
I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. We're talking with Beth Fertig of WNYC. One of the questioners on the panel at last night's Attorney General Democratic candidates debate, as well as Kate Lucadamo, my colleague at the New York Daily News, has been following the Attorney General's race for a number of months now. We have a clip now about 24 seconds. It's Sean Patrick Maloney will be the speaker, talking to give some of the mood of the back and forth that was going on at the debate last night.
Well, you know, being between these two gentlemen is like little like being in a UN peacekeeping force, right? Look, I've said Mark should knock it off. I think it hurts Democrats. I think it hurts Democrats when we... I'm sorry. I know this is a contact sport. I'm not afraid of that. But I think the attacks, I mean, have just gone over the top. And so that's right. I think Mark ought to knock it off.
Now, Kate, when Maloney says, hey, knock it off, let's all be good Democrats together, that's not really a neutral statement. I mean, at first blush, it might appear to be. But in a way, that's kind of stopping Mark Green from doing really the only thing that's available to him to try and make comparisons and get himself back into this race, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a neutral statement because Mark Green is not attacking Maloney or King at all. He's, you know, obviously targeting Cuomo and why Maloney felt the need to defend Cuomo, I'm not sure. He seemed to be saying that he just thought that this was giving the Republicans more ammunition, and I think the three of them wanted to, you know, very much seem like united Republicans, like, okay, well, you know, we all want to be attorney general. We're all going to get our message out there, but at the end of the day, we're going to support whoever wins this, and we don't want to, you know, unnecessarily attack the other.
Now, at the same time, Beth, this isn't seen as a race where the Democrats are expected to have a blowout, as in the governor's race and the Senate race. Waiting at the end of this contentious Democratic primary is a match with Jeanine Pirro, who's really no slouch. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, definitely a widely held opinion that the Democrats have an advantage, that whoever is running for attorney general is going to benefit from Elliot Spitzer's coattails, that Jeanine Pirro's candidacy hasn't quite materialized with the strength that some might have expected, especially since she switched from running for Senate to then running for attorney general. What's interesting is that this is a very fiercely competitive primary. Cuomo is definitely the front runner, but you have Mark Green, who's run for state office before, running for Senate. Meaning statewide voters. He's familiar with people upstate. He's run elections in New York City. You would think that he would have a lot more strength going into this race, but Andrew Cuomo did a lot of due diligence in the past few years since he dropped out of the race for governor in picking up the support of Democratic county leaders. And Mark Green has more and more been pushed to the side. And I don't know how much of that is tainted by his failed run for mayor or his own personality and not going after the support of these county leaders the way that Andrew Cuomo did. But for whatever reason, Cuomo has had an advantage in fundraising and in Democratic Party support, so much more so than Mark Green, that Green is now in this kind of up against the ropes position where his only tactic is to lash out at Cuomo. And that's what we saw last night.
We'll be back with more analysis after a short break. You're listening to WNYC.
It's It's been 13 years that this case has wended its way through the court system. I'm the only candidate on this stage who has said that if we were asked to defend the state in this continuing saga after the Court of Appeals has decided, I would not represent them. Enough is enough. Let's enforce the law of the state of New York.
That was Charlie King, one of four candidates for Attorney General, speaking at a debate last night at Pace University. I'm Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News, in for Brian Lehrer. We are talking about the debate and its aftermath with WNYC's Beth Fertig and Kate Lugadamo of the New York Daily News. Beth, what's that about? This question about whether or not the Attorney General should enforce the law of the state of New York, and candidates were actually bragging about the laws that they would not enforce. Can you explain that for us?
Yeah. This is actually a really important issue, and it's something where Eliot Spitzer has gotten off quite light on this issue, because they all love to say that they're for education and that they would want to give more money to public schools, and that's certainly a very popular issue. But there's a very critical court battle going on right now, which was brought 13 years ago by the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, seeking to get more funding for New York City schools on the argument that they were underfunded and that the city schools have higher needs than other districts. This group won their lawsuit, but it's been tied up in appeal after appeal after appeal, with Governor Pataki, as you know, the head of the state government, saying that the state should not have to pay all this, you know, the billions of dollars to New York City, that this is an issue for the legislature to decide, not for the courts. Well, in each of these appeals, Eliot Spitzer, as the state's lawyer, his office has had to defend the state. There have also been private lawyers who were contracted out to work with the state. And so, you know, it's a case where Eliot Spitzer, when asked, why did you continue to defend the state if you say that there should be a settlement in this and that, you know, you're proposing more school aid? He says, well, it was my job to defend the state. I was the attorney general, and that's your job. You have to do your job. You can't recuse yourself over something like this just because you disagree. So we wanted to ask the other candidates, do you agree with that position? Is there any case in which you would not want to take the state's position and feel like it's against your positions morally or ethically or for whatever reason? Sean Patrick Maloney, even though he's very supportive of gay marriage, for example, said no matter what, you got to do the job, do the job, do the job. And I kept pressing him, well, is there any case in which you would disagree? And he said, you know, no, you just got to do the job. Well, then the other candidates, Mark Green said he would not recuse himself, but that he would hire outside counsel to work with the Attorney General's office if it involved defending the death penalty or defending the state's position against gay marriage, for example, because morally he opposed those positions and he wouldn't want to have to be defending the state. And he thought other attorneys could do a better job with that. Charlie King said specifically he would not defend the state on this education finance case because he was so ethically opposed to the governor's position on that, that he, you know, Governor Pataki's position, that he could not have continued to defend the state. And Andrew Cuomo, when pressed on it, said, well, you know, if it was some sort of frivolous lawsuit that, you know, I felt was just not worth getting into, then maybe I would back off. But he sort of shrugged off that question. And so neither of them really took a firm stand, except maybe Green on the moral issue with this. But, you know, it's interesting to hear them try to appease the voters by saying, you know, we all support more aid for schools and, you know, we're for the death penalty or against the death penalty. But, you know, this is really a tricky issue of what do you do when you're the attorney general if you're going to be on the hot seat defending a law that is quite unpopular or popular in some parts of the states and not others.
I had quite a nice discussion yesterday with Councilman Oliver Capel, who, as you know, spent about 8 months as Attorney General back in 1994. And he had a very interesting kind of nuanced position. It really does seem like it varies from office holder to office holder, which laws you will or will not press. And it's in a nuanced way. It's not saying you won't do anything at all. It's just saying that you'll use the office differently,
right,
on certain issues.
And Eliot Spitzer was invisible throughout the Campaign for Fiscal Equity school funding suit. You know, it was Governor Pataki was perceived as the one defending the state when actually it was Spitzer's lawyers going to court. So he just stayed out of the way and said, if he's governor, he will settle this or he will propose more money. And all the other candidates for attorney general last night were operating on the assumption that Spitzer will be the next governor, and so this issue is going to go away, but it may not go away, and there's other issues that could come up that they'll have to defend.
Well, while we're talking about what the attorney general does or does not do, we have a clip of one of the candidates talking about what in their view is most important.
The last time I prosecuted a case was as a criminal prosecutor. Elliot Spitzer, by
is
the
that
way,
1984.
Yeah, but the if Elliot the last time Elliot Spitzer as Attorney General, Elliot Spitzer as Attorney General, I think if he spent an hour in court in 8 years, it was a lot. That's not the job. The job is supervising and managing attorneys. I've managed 350 attorneys, brought more cases than anyone on this stage, and I think that's what the job is about.
That was Andrew Cuomo talking about what in his opinion the job is actually about. There's a lot of rhetoric that gets thrown around about what the job is or is not. And one thing we did learn yesterday from Councilman Capel is that it's not the Attorney General is not the chief law enforcement officer of the state. That may be true in some other states, such as New Jersey, but that in New York, he's really the chief legal, he or she is the chief legal officer, which is slightly different. And Cuomo's giving us yet another sort of maybe counterintuitive take on it, which is that the job isn't necessarily about your courtroom skills, but it's more about your ability to manage lawyers, which is an entirely different sort of thing. Kate, do you think that is getting across to readers, to listeners, to the general public, that this job isn't just about being a super lawyer?
I'm not sure that that's getting across to them just yet. I think when Jeanine Pirro comes out and says, I'm a prosecutor, and starts talking about her legal experience, that seems to resonate with some readers or voters. But I think, you know, and where Cuomo sees the office a little bit differently, and, you know, he sees it, I have to manage, I have to supervise the lawyer. So they're kind of saying, you know, we're both legal experts. We both understand the law. We both understand the position. But they're kind of going about it different ways.
Yeah, it's kind of it reminds me of the question of if you run a great restaurant, does that mean you're necessarily the best cook, or do you know how to handle waiters and getting the supplies in and advertising it and all of that kind of thing?
Exactly, and then I think it leaves the public with a lot of questions about, well, what does the Attorney General really do then? And I think that's one of the interesting questions in this race, because the candidates are all coming at it from different sides, because Elliot Spitzer has shown you can actually, you have a lot of latitude in what you can do. You can go after Wall Street. You can make a difference in other areas. On the other hand, you have to defend the state against, you know, any lawsuit that comes their way. So it's like being at a big law firm, and there, you know, you can pick a wide array of cases to work on. And I think in some ways it may be confusing voters a little bit, and, you know, that, and because the candidates are so well known, so they're looking more at personality, they're looking at, you know, they're listening to issues.
That's always the case in a primary, that because the positions aren't all that different on substance, people end up emphasizing personality traits, and that's when it starts to get bitter, and that's when it starts to get personal. I am Errol Lewis of the New York Daily News. I'm in for Brian Lehrer today. We're talking with Beth Fertig of WNYC, one of the questioners at last night's Attorney General's Democratic Candidates Debate, as well as Kate Lugodamo of the New York Daily News, who's been following this race. Kate, quite a bit of time was spent on whether Andrew Cuomo, during his time as Secretary of the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, did enough to ban or reduce the use of pesticides in HUD housing. What was that all about?
Well, I think Green has been going after Andrew's HUD record quite a bit, because Andrew has been touting it as, you know, I've done a great job cleaning up an agency, and I can reform Albany, I can make similar changes as Attorney General. And I think it's Green's attempt to say, well, you know, your HUD record wasn't perfect, and that's what he's bringing out, that he's bringing out issues that, you know, and so have been out there before. I mean, this have been written about. It was written about in 2004. I believe some of them may have come up when Andrew ran for governor, and they're not necessarily irrelevant, but I think their Green strategy is to say Cuomo's not as great as he's trying to make himself seem.
In that case, from what I could gather, and I it really was a little confusing to hear it for the first time in the midst of the debate, but it seemed to involve using natural pesticides to get rid of rodents and other pests, meaning less chemicals, less harmful, and the connection was with the safety of children who live in this housing. It didn't sound to me like there was any charge of malfeasance or any kind of nefariousness, but just that it was maybe an administrative bottleneck that prevented this from happening?
Well, I think what he was saying, you know, that this law was passed in 1996 to avoid, you know, using quite as many pesticides, and that HUD did not do a good enough job of enforcing the law. And that it seems to have stretched over more than one administration. So why they didn't enforce the law, what extent, you know, or to what extent they did or didn't enforce the law, you know, we don't know at this point. We don't really know Cuomo's direct role in it.
Is it your sense that that the other reporters who are on this beat following this race are going to pick up on that and start digging around today?
They might. I mean, I think everybody was a little surprised that for something, you know, that to make that substantial a claim in the middle of a debate when so many issues are coming out is kind of, you know, wouldn't be surprising if he had had a press conference today and came out about it so that everyone could investigate it a little bit more. So they may investigate it, but it's a Friday. I think it kind of depends on what comes up. I think it will come up more as you see profiles of the candidates and during the primary. And I think people will look at his HUD record a little bit more carefully.
Beth, I'm going to read to you a comment that got posted to the Daily News Politics blog by somebody that I think a lot of our listeners know, Gerson Barrero, columnist for El Diario. And his comment was, "It was 3-1 from the start, and then Mark Green joined in to complete the job on himself. I can't pick a winner, but for certain, Mark was the loser." What do you think of that?
I think that's probably pretty accurate in terms of how the viewers saw it, because Mark Green's job last night was to keep comparing himself and contrasting himself to Andrew Cuomo, and he felt he had to go on the negative in order to do that because he's so far behind in the polls. And his ads have been a compare and contrast campaign that Cuomo has called negative. And last night, I think Green just didn't, I don't know that he really did himself a service. I think that he looked so negative, especially when the other two were literally shaking hands with Cuomo, making little deals to support whoever the nominee is. When they got to ask each other questions, they all asked Cuomo a question, but the other two candidates asked Andrew Cuomo pretty much softball questions like, "Will you support whoever the nominee is?" And they shook hands and they smiled and joked a lot. And you sort of had to wonder if they were vying for a position in Cuomo's department if he were to become the attorney general. But then Mark Green just kept, you know, hammering again and again and again after Cuomo, and at the very end raises this issue with the pesticides. And I think Cuomo was a bit stunned. He didn't know how to answer it. He said, "Well, I'm not sure if I was even in the agency when that lawsuit came out." And Green kept hammering him, "Well, even if it was after you left, it still affected the time that you were there. And Elliot Spitzer is taking on HUD over this. And that means if you were to take the job, you'd be suing yourself." And so it got very, very bitter. And then in closing arguments, where you're supposed to look like the good guy and make yourself attractive to the voters, and they all come across very positive, they each got a minute to make their closing arguments. And Green again went after Andrew Cuomo to the point where the moderator, Dominic Carter, had to give Cuomo extra time to defend himself. And they almost started getting into it again there at the end. And people in the audience were booing Mark Green, which, even if they were all partisans of Andrew Cuomo, the audience still hears that booing. And it's going to affect their perception of Mark Green looking like the guy who just can't control himself and has to keep going negative. So, you know, it's interesting because Green did this same type of tactic at the end of the mayoral race when he ran against Michael Bloomberg 5 years ago. And when he started to fall down in the polls, he felt like his only way of getting ahead was to call attention to an accusation by a Bloomberg employee when he was at his financial company that she was pregnant and he told her to kill it. And so for 24 hours, in the final 24 hours of the campaign, the Green camp spent all their money on television ads that just had the words "kill it" again and again and again on the screen. And it was so negative. But, you know, even though voters like to say that they hate negative ads, politicians know that they do respond to them. And so he felt that was his only tactic, apparently, was to turn on the negatives.
As I recall, it was a very close margin.
Yeah.
I don't know if what I understand about negative campaigning is that it often is intended to disgust the voters, and then the hope is that your opponent's people will be more disgusted than yours and just stay out of it and
right.
stay home.
Right. And that political research shows that even though people say, oh, we don't like negative ads, we don't like very ads, negative ads, it is very effective.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, Kate and I know about that at the Daily News. 60% of our covers are sold on the newsstand. And so people complain about tabloids and stuff you put on it, but they're picking it up. I should say, just for fairness, this is another note from our politics blog. Not everybody sees Green as having really been put upon last night. And here's a comment I'd like to read. Mark Green was the real winner tonight, as can be seen from the articles that are up so far, meaning the various articles. He had by far the most memorable lines and got his point across. I can see why Cuomo doesn't want another debate. What do you think of that?
That's definitely true. You know, he did get a lot of press for his attacks, and not everybody watches those debates. They just read the newspaper accounts of them the next day. And so it gets Green's name out there. You know, there's a reason why he chose to do that. And so you can say it didn't look very attractive when you're watching the debate, and sometimes it made him look a little too shrill. But when all you know is that very few people watch these types of debates, but many, many more are going to read about it the next day, then that's the reason for doing that.
Florence from Manhattan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Oh, hi. This is the first for me, so...
Whoops.
I just have an opposite reaction to what your commentator said. Yes, Mark Green was on the attack, but I was turned off by the coziness of the other two candidates with Cuomo. And I don't have a... are you there?
Yes.
Okay. I don't have a preference in this race, but it seemed very suspicious to me how nice these two guys were to Cuomo, and I do think that the audience was stacked with Cuomo people or anti-Green people. Your comment about they seem to be applauding and all the you know in funny places, absolutely without question. That was my take. I listened to it on the radio, by the way, your station. So I didn't have the advantage of seeing what people looked like and whether Green looked harsh or not harsh or whatever. But it just seems so uncharacteristically stacked against inexplicably stacked against Green in terms of the audience and these two guys being so nice to Cuomo. But in the end, the point is, in the end, I'm more sympathetic now to Green than I would have been.
Okay. Well, thank you for the call.
Okay. Right.
If indeed that strategy was being employed by the Cuomo people, there's some evidence that it may not necessarily work out the way that they want it. Let me ask you real quickly, Beth, before we end. As a member of the panel who helped make up the questions, how do you make up those lightning round questions, the ones where they have to answer yes or no?
Oh, those are fun. Those are fun. We each threw out a whole bunch of suggestions. And, you know, this one where we asked them, should Hillary Rodham Clinton be the next president? They all said yes instantly, you know. Or should public employees such as police and firefighters be allowed to strike? Only Charlie King said yes. The others all said no. Sometimes they got a little bit confused. Are you running for governor? Mark Green and Sean Patrick Maloney said no, but then Charlie King and Andrew Cuomo each sort of paused a little and made a joke about, well, are you going to take a lie detector when they each said no?
Well, there's that double negative. Have you ever not left a tip?
Yeah, yeah. And some of them got confused a little bit. We know that Charlie King is the only one who ever voted for an American Idol contestant. But we also know that among them, Charlie King is also the only one who believes that eminent domain should not be used for supporting private developers, such as the Bruce Ratner Project.
We are going to leave it right there. Thank you so much, Beth Furtick of WNYC, Kate
Lucadamo
of the New York Daily News. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Errol Lewis. You're listening to WNYC.
Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.